Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today we're going to rethink the pushing stage. It's extremely common for pushing stages to be managed with laboring people reclining on their backs and being told to grab behind their knees and pull them open toward their ears while tucking their chins and holding their breaths for count of 10. Is this really the best way? Does it support physiology? And what effects does it have on the baby and on the perineum that's receiving the brunt of that exertion? The fabulous Wapio is here to tell us more. Stay tuned. This episode of Breathful is brought to you by Aeroflow Breast Pumps, a durable medical equipment provider specializing in helping moms receive maximum coverage and reimbursement for a breast pump through their insurance. Let Aeroflow take the hassle out of getting the pump that's right for you. Learn more at aeroflowbreastpumps.com/birthful. This episode of Breathful is also brought to you by Expectful, an evidence-based guided meditation app created specifically for those trying to conceive, pregnant, or new moms. Reduce your stress, reduce your complications, and improve your connection to your baby and partner. Learn more and sign up for a free 2-week trial at expectful.com/birthful. The Breathful Podcast, talking to maternity pros to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty mamas and mamas-to-be, and mighty dads and dads-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show, for your reviews, your feedback, your requests, your ratings, reviews, and just, you know, telling every pregnant person you see out there about the show. I really, truly appreciate it. We are back to school here in the Northern Hemisphere, which means that summer has come to a close, and so have our birth stories for the summer series. A big enormous thank you to all the wonderful parents who shared their stories and, you know, that were part of helping normalize birth and balance out the scary portrayals shown in traditional media. We had quite a range this year with both great hospital births and home births, and everything was represented, including a breech vaginal birth. I hope you all enjoyed listening to the stories as much as I did. So the summer months can be lazy ones, and if you're anything like me, you're now thinking, yikes, it's time to get your act together and, you know, get back to it in full force. To help you with that, I've got a marvelous incentive to help you not only prepare for birth, but also prepare for the first weeks with your newborn. If you've been listening to the show for a while now, you know that I have two great resources. The Birth Partners Ultimate Labor Support Toolkit is one, and that one's made specially to help birth partners provide helpful support and be more confident during labor so that they too can have a lovely birth experience. And then the other one's my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes that help you discover the mighty parent within, figure out exactly what your baby needs, and, you know, actually enjoy life with your new little person, not just survive of endure it, which is usually, sadly, the case. So the incentive is this: use the coupon code SCHOOL to get $50 off the Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. And you can use the same code to get $10 off the Birth Partners Ultimate Labor Support Toolkit at birthful.com/toolkit. I'll put links on the show notes, so go check them out there. But the coupon code is the same for both offers, and you can use it as many times as you'd like. So go to birthful.com. The links are there where you can go further to, you know, the Birthful Courses and the /toolkit. And the discount code again is SCHOOL. Get to it. All right. I am so incredibly super excited to have Wapio back on the show today to talk about the pushing stage. Now, to me, Wapio is like the definition of a wise person because she combines evidence-based information and science with experience and heart. And she does that to bring forth so much good knowledge into the world, and the birthing world is so much richer because of having her in it. So I just love talking to her at any chance I get. Wapio has been an independent midwife for the past 30 years, and in 2001, she founded the Matrona to educate midwives, doulas, and other birthing caregivers in the facilitating of the transformative event that is birth and the creation of family. Welcome, Wapio. I am so thrilled to have you back to the show. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Same here. I really appreciate being here and very honored.
Yay. And this is since I last spoke to you. I know that we touched a little bit upon the not necessarily pushing, you know, like letting physiology take over and physiology push, right? But not the body, you know, the mom in actively pushing during when we talked about the holistic stages of birth.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
And that was a couple, you know, almost a year and a half ago. And since then, some articles have come up showing research that if you're not told to push and not expected and you do your own thing, then you have better outcomes. And I've seen it more within my practice because I've tried to pay attention to this. Because for me personally, pushing was always the not fun stage, right? It's like, ugh, now we're doing this. It's like trudge, exhaust the mom, and then a baby is born. Because usually it was based on directed pushing. So the idea, this new idea, new old idea of pushing was fascinating to me. So I'm happy to have you here so we can dig deep into what that not pushing all means.
Okay. I'm happy to talk to that because I feel this is one of the areas of our modern birthing practices that really needs reform.
Yeah.
And undergirding the reform, of course, is looking at the physiology and making sure that we are understanding physiology for the modern woman, okay? And how that has, the physiology of the body hasn't changed, but how we employ that physiology has changed from years ago when women were put in beds, okay? And were really basically their birthing experience was sort of commanded of them. Today, our modern women are, you know, wanting to be out of the beds, wanting to be more proactive, wanting to be part of their birth and feeling like their birth is something they're doing rather than something done to them. So let's take another look at physiology with that in mind, applying it to the modern woman and the birthing practices of today.
Love it. Yes, let's do that. So looking at physiology, what happens, we've sort of always thought of that pushing stage of like from when you're 10 to baby is born. What happens physiologically to mom and baby as the cervix, you know, approaches full dilation, and what needs to happen between that and when baby comes out?
Okay, so here we go with some physiology, because I love this, and physiology will set you free, all right? So what we're used to in common practice is that we have divided labor into three stages, first, second, third, even like a little fourth stage in the postpartum. But we're very familiar with first stage, which is the dilation and effacement of the cervix from, you know, fingertip to 10 centimeters, we say. And then what we do is after a woman is said to be at 10 centimeters, usually through a vaginal exam, lo and behold, now we're ready to engage second stage, and we call that pushing. But there's a whole body of physiologic wisdom and knowledge that is right in this place between first and second stage. There's a stage of labor that we're missing, all right? Because the woman does not go, generally speaking, from 10 centimeters dilated, where basically you can't feel her cervix, to ready to push. It's just not physiologically, the body's not engineered that way. All right, so let me explain. We have to look at the idea of full dilation, meaning that you can't feel the cervix, but it doesn't mean that the entire lower uterine segment has been pulled up appropriately into the upper uterine segment, thereby completely clearing the path for the baby to be born. We're not talking about this. We don't have an understanding of it. And let me just say, we do want to reform second stage, but it's nobody's fault. We're not pointing a finger here at caregivers or nurses or doctors or anything like that. What we're really saying is that the knowledge and, collected experience from years ago, that when we didn't feel a cervix, we told the woman to push, has just been passed down. It's just been handed down. It's what caregivers are taught. If you can't feel the cervix, she's ready to push. All right? So that's why we do this. All right? Because it's, nobody has revisited the actual physiology. So now, back to the physiology. When a woman is 10 centimeters dilated, we say that meaning we can't feel her cervix. But there's no way, I'm repeating myself, there's no way that you can tell, all right, if through an exam, that the entire lower uterine segment and the cervix with it is pulled up above the baby's head. You see, the only way to know that is, generally speaking, when a mother instinctively feels like pushing. So here's a big disconnect. Managed pushing, in other words, we don't feel the cervix anymore, so why don't you push your baby? Versus instinctual, or what we're also calling physiologic pushing. But let's really be clear about what physiologic pushing is. It's instinctual. It's when a mother has the instinct and the urge to push rather than being directed to push. All right? So what you're going to see, and what, you know, what I have seen, and of course, a lot of my, most of my experience has been with moms in home births who basically were not confined to beds nor wanted to be, and had the option of allowing their instinctual responses to come forth and be valued. So what's going on here now too is that when the cervix is completely dilated in the sense that we can't feel it dilating anymore. In other words, it's opened to probably the widest place that it needs to open. It's almost like a crowning, the way the perineum later on opens to the widest place, and we call that the baby's head crowning. There's also an interior crowning when the cervix has opened as wide as it can over the baby's head, but then the rest of the lower uterine segment needs to be pulled up completely. And during this time, you'll notice what's going on here. If you're watching, you will see that the character of the labor changes. You will see that the fury of transition, if you will, quiets down. The mother seems to go into a very trance-like place. The labor doesn't completely stop. All right, it doesn't stop, but it definitely slows down, almost like it was when it was first getting started. Sometimes contractions are only 30 seconds long, and they're 5 or 10 minutes apart even. And I call this place the quietude. Why? Because if you're with a birthing mother and this happens, you become very aware that there's a change in the labor and that everything has quieted down. What's happening now? Two things that are important physiologically in order to bring the baby forth. One of them is that classic cardinal movement of labor we call internal rotation. What is internally rotating? The baby's head. The baby's head is rotating from the lateral, okay, or the oblique into the AP, the anterior posterior. In other words, the baby's head is now aligning with the opening birth canal.
And I'm going to interrupt you there for a second, because I think like this was one big revelation to me at one point, right? When I understood very basic physiology of the pelvis, that the top, the entrance of the pelvis is wider side to side at the top. So for the head to go in that way, it's got to be looking like side to height, side to like, you know, facing, aligning with hip to hip. And then at the outlet of the pelvis, the bottom, it's wider front to back. So somewhere along the way, baby has to go from looking hip to hip to looking, you know, front to back. And that's that internal rotation, right? Of like, wait, this is how it's bigger on this side over here, and it's bigger, you know, later on this way. So you've got a corkscrew somewhere in between.
Absolutely. You've just impinged on that mechanism of or that movement of the baby, all right, called internal rotation. And very clearly, it makes so much sense if you you don't even have to have an engineering degree to realize that from side to side versus from anterior to posterior, there has to be some way that the baby's head, all right, turns from side to side to anterior, posterior to be born. And that's the place. This right here is the place where we jump the gun, where we think, oh, there's no cervix, so let's go ahead and push. And we'll now modern medicine understands that the head does rotate, but the idea is here, and I'm not sure it's a good one, is that if we push, we'll make the head rotate faster. Okay, you see what I mean? If we put some downward pressure, we'll force the head to rotate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's considered then the justification, if you will, for pushing. All right, for pushing when you can't feel the cervix anymore, because we're just going to assist the baby's head to rotate. My feeling is this: if you are pushing while the baby's trying to rotate, well, simple engineering, something is trying to rotate without friction, but you're pushing from above, there's going to be friction. Okay? Friction on the baby's head between the mother's bones. And also, what can happen, consider this, that if you are pushing from above while something is like a ball bearing, as it were, was trying to rotate gracefully, what you may end up doing is cramming it in there. Okay? So the idea of pushing too soon, let's dispel that idea right away. There is no hurry in pushing whatsoever. What is the hurry? All right. The hurry, I think, is more for convenience rather than for well-being for the mother and the baby. All right. If a mother is relaxing during her labor at any point, which she clearly does in this time that we just mentioned where internal rotation will take place, all right, why would we disturb her? Her baby's not going to stay in there forever. Why wouldn't we give her a little rest, a little respite?
And knowing
right,
also
before the pushing.
Yeah, and that she's going to need a lot of energy in a little bit. So
you see, yes,
right?
And
give
labor takes care of you. Your body takes care of you. Your body would never assume that you would go into from the fury of the contractions of transition to all of a sudden now the effort of pushing your baby out. Okay? No, your body has a wisdom and a sense to it where there's a resting period there, a quietude. So let's dispel this idea of checking and saying the baby is, the cervix is 10 centimeters, let's push. That is basically a tricky thing, all right? Because you have no idea as a caregiver where the lower uterine segment is. And if a mother hasn't had her quietude, chances are the baby hasn't rotated. So you're pushing a non-rotated baby. And I just explained why that would not be a good thing, friction, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All right. So what should we do? What should we do? Well, obviously, let's add this other stage of labor so that people understand, oh, she's in her quietude. Oh, she's laboring down. Oh, she's fine. Oh, no, her labor hasn't stalled. No, leave her alone. Let her rest. She'll be back. And she will. Mm-hmm. All right, she'll be back in a half hour, maybe an hour, all right, galvanized, electrified, ready to push because she's had some resting and Her baby is hooked up. Her baby is facing the right way. She is ready to push. There's nothing holding the baby back, and pushing will instinctively begin. Mm-hmm. All right. So we said that there were two things that happened in the quietude. All right. One of them is that there's a relaxation for the mother. She can get her, she can catch her breath, take a much needed rest. All right. Have a moment. In fact, have a divine moment, if you will. All right, this is a time in labor that we're talking physiology, but I'm also going to add a little bit of the psyche and the psychology here. This is also a time when a mother gets her wits about her. She's no longer flailing with the contractions of transition. She comes to a place of peace. And in that peace, oftentimes we have moments of revelation, moments of profound depth and meaning, all right, if we do. All right, so this is also part of the whole idea of the quietude in a labor. And then, all right, so she has a rest, the baby's head turns, and now we are in position for the baby to be born. She'll come back. She'll wake up, she'll come back, she'll open her eyes, she'll be galvanized, she'll be like something's different. Oftentimes, she will want to get up. This is when I'm seeing women who may very well, in their quietude, be lounging on the couch or head back or taking a little snooze or leaning against someone. All of a sudden now, when she feels everything in alignment, the baby's head is rotated. She's rejuvenated. She's had her moment. Boom. She's up. All right. And being up now, and there's no way, I'm going to talk about this in a bit. There's no way we can't do this in a hospital. All right. I know that I'm drawing off my experience at home, but I'm here to tell you there's no way that we can, there's a way to do this in a hospital, and I'll go into that later, all right? Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, what's happening now is that her instinctual responses, all right, her instinctual responses to this labor, all right, and this alignment are also in alignment, and she will push. Generally speaking, we think about pushing as, you know, take a deep breath, put your chin on your chest, and exert the maximum allowable torqueage, okay?
Well, I count to 10, and you grab the back of your knees and bring them to your ears.
This is heroics, and it's absolutely not necessary. It's not good for babies, okay? It's not good for babies. It's not good for mothers. And I feel very strongly that we should attempt to stop this kind of pushing at all costs, mm-hmm. All right? What you're going to see is that a woman who is instinctively pushing usually doesn't have that histrionic type of pushing very much. Maybe at the end you'll notice some kind of a surge in her pushing in the sense that this is birthing a baby. But what's happening now is that the baby is coming down. Now, remember, you know how we talk about the fetal position? Your head is flexed. It's the smallest package you can be. That's not how a baby's born. When that head, okay, after that head has rotated and she's gone through her quietude, now what the uterus is doing is beginning to push the baby from above and extend the head. Babies are born through the mechanism of extension, not flexion. So wait a minute. Wait a minute. Back up. When we are pushing a baby at 10 centimeters dilated without the head rotating, we are pushing a baby down in flexion. We're pushing a flexed baby down. No, this is not physiology. Physiology pushes a baby down and allows the head to extend, you see? And the only way the head can do that is to have a clear passage in front of it, meaning that the head is now in the anterior posterior, not sideways or oblique. Mm-hmm. Make sense?
Yeah. So whoa, I'm going to...
Oh, see?
I'm going to repeat it back to you to make sure we get it, right? So with the flexion, it's the chin, baby's chin is tucked to his or her chest so that the smallest part of the head, the crown, presents first to, you know, create the less mass possible, right? Present the smallest part to get through the first part. But then once the head rotates and to navigate that curve between the pubic bone and the tailbone, it needs to extend the neck. So like that chin goes up and the head kind of tilts back. And then that's the position that they go in to be born.
Yes. Yes. You see? All right, so that whole mechanism is happening during this stage of labor that we haven't described yet, called the quietude. Or what you can do also is add two stages of second stage. One of them is extension, the baby coming down, and the other one is pushing. All right, you're going to find that organically speaking, very few women need to push their baby down to the perineum. The uterus does that remarkably and adequately. I want to remind you and everyone listening of something that we don't talk about very much, because we have this idea that a woman who's having an epidural will really have a very, very, very hard time getting her baby to do all of this. Wait a minute. You know, they have known this for years and years, back in the 40s and 50s, that the people, the women who have the easiest births are two groups. One, cardiac patients with class 3 and 4 heart disease, and they have the easiest births in town. Why? Because they're not allowed to have any kind of hysterectomy. They're not allowed to push, period. And you would think, well, the poor women, they all have C-sections, right? Or they have that, you know, they have vacuum extractions, or they're manipulated births. No, their babies just ooze out. And this is common knowledge. And the other group of women who have once similar births where babies ooze out are another group of women who cannot push, and they are quadriplegic or paraplegic women. Paraplegic women have very little trouble giving birth. Why? Because their uterus isn't paralyzed, and their uterus can birth their baby very adequately. Mm-hmm. So if you take that information and you translate it somehow into, well, could this be the same for everyone? I mean, just because you have a heart condition or your parapet can't push, does that mean your birth is automatically easier? No, this is for everyone, okay? It is totally possible to have a, what we would call, spontaneous second stage.
And to me, this is what a relief, right? Because I find that we've taken birth and we've gotten like, it becomes this milepost of like, I've got to get to 10. And when I get to 10, then I push. And then everybody's just waiting to get to 10, where that's really just like, not a big deal. It's just one more step in the process. What you really need to get to is to have a baby. So in between, you don't need to, you know, delineate it and put a boundary there and erect a wall between one and the other that you have to jump over. It's just one more step and keep flowing with it. And what a relief that you don't have to like, am I going to know if I how to push? Am I going to be able to do it? Will I have enough energy to push? Will I know when it is happening? Like, just know that, oh, actually, I don't need to push. My uterus and my baby will rotate and move as needed. My uterus will exert enough the exact force that is needed, because it is there touching the baby and can realize how much force is needed without me having to be involved here until I can't but push, which is a very different sensation. But then, because we're seeing all of these, you know, all of these pelvic floor dysfunctions and all of these babies that come out with like head cranks and effects of breastfeeding when they prefer one side or the other and their tissues are a little bit off. And, you know, why is that happening? And I can't but, and this is just me not speculating, but like doing an educated guess of all that force that we're putting on baby's head against mom's perineum when they're not ready, like we're cramming things in, that has to have a ripple effect somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it does. And, you're right. It does cause these gynecologic problems and the structural problems in women. Gynecologists are often saying to obstetricians, what are you guys doing? You know, why are we seeing such an increase in cystocele, rectocele, prolapse and various, you know, huge tears and dysfunction? And also, look at the baby. We are seeing an increase in fetal distress. Well, doesn't that make sense? Pushing a baby that's not ready to come, forcing a baby to turn its head, like grinding with friction and crinking the neck, don't you think that has some sequela in terms of fetal distress? Yeah, this is why I feel like second stage needs reform. I mean, serious reform, not just a new approach, reform.
Yeah.
Why? Because women, their bottoms are being damaged and babies are C-sectioned because of fetal distress. Oftentimes that is ironically and unfortunately caused by the practices, okay, caused by the caregiver practices.
Right, and babies
and caregiver
being, you know, quote-unquote stuck during pushing, after 3 hours of pushing, right?
See, yeah.
Because they're still up high. They started pushing up.
Because they're not ready to be pushed,
you see?
They haven't rotated, and then and possibly, I mean, normally speaking, rotation happens. If you have to wait for it, you wait for it. Mm-hmm. Okay, if generally speaking, a mother will have a longer quietude. She may have an hour or 2 hour quietude waiting for her baby to rotate. All right, we do not need to forcibly rotate babies' heads. Now, the concern here is that does not particularly mesh with our birthing practices today, because a lot of people are not willing to wait a couple of hours even for a head to rotate when we can just push, all right? When we can just push and force the head to rotate, and then if it gets stuck, we can always, you know, use instrumentation to fix it. Okay. Now, I know that doesn't happen in every single case, but you can see the sequela of forced pushing when the head is not in the AP and the mother is not instinctively engaging pushing. She's forcing it.
Yeah. See? And she's getting exhausted. That she spent, you know, if you spend 3 hours pushing or 2 hours pushing or 1 hour pushing, like all out with all your might, holding your breath and like exerting yourself, your baby's going to be born, but you are an exhausted mother. Like, that's a tough place to meet your baby.
Yes, it is. It's on a battleground. You know? I mean, come on. This is why I use the word reform,
yes,
not just approach. Okay. And listen, I promise you, I am not telling you anything that isn't undergirded by physiology. I have the charts, the bells, the whistles, the books to prove it. You see?
Well, and the medical providers know this too. Like they somehow they've learned it, but then they don't connect the dots, I find.
Well, yes, because you will see in any textbook that the most efficient dilator of a cervix is an intact bag of waters. Everyone knows that. Everyone reads it, okay, in medical school or nursing school, but that's not how we practice. So I feel that we need to take a new look at physiology. And there are some souls out there, some nurses and midwives and doctors who are trying to do that, who really are open to a more physiologic approach, or basically an undisturbed approach. Maybe from the point of women, it might be called undisturbed. From the point of the medical model, it's physiology, because we just can't leave women alone, but we can leave them to their physiology. So that's a good word, all right? To me, they mean the same thing, an undisturbed approach versus, and a physiologic approach versus managed or directed care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, now.
Hold that thought, because we're going to take a break. And we'll be okay. Right back, and we'll continue. And then we have scenarios, and I have more questions for you. We'll be right back. Are you planning on getting a breast pump? Let AeroFlow Breast Pump simplify the process for you. Their breast pump specialists are experts at determining the full extent of benefits provided to you through your insurance plan. Once you fill out their qualifying form, then a dedicated specialist will verify your coverage and contact you in 3 to 5 days or sooner to discuss your options and help you select the breast pump that fits your needs. They offer a wide selection of pumps from top manufacturers like Hygiea, Evenflow, Spectra, Amita, and more. AeroFlow will take it from there, contacting your physician for a prescription, billing your insurance for the breast pump, and then shipping your breast pump to your door for free. Easy peasy, so you can focus your time on doing other more fun baby prep stuff. I was looking through the reviews on their website and was quite impressed. They have over 4,000 reviews and still get an average of 5 stars. Here's what one of the verified buyers had to say. Quote, AeroFlow made this process super easy. I filled out the information online, got a confirmation email that same day, and received the pump and package the next day. I highly recommend it. End quote. Learn more at aeroflowbreastpumps.com/birthful, and don't forget to add the /birthful part so they know who got you there. And we are back talking about physiological stage of, like, this new reform of the pushing stage. I'm so excited. I love that. Yes. I love it. Let's reform it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we have covered some physiology, all right, in the sense that if we look at the way the baby moves down through the pelvis and birth canal, and the idea of rotating the head and different positions that the baby comes into, and then putting that together with what's happening with a mother in labor, all right, whether she's dilating, whether she's in transition, whether she's having a resting period for the rotation, or whether she is now engaged, all right, in what we would call a second stage, meaning the baby is coming. And I like the British model. The British model has been around for a long time, actually. In the British model, there are 2 stages of second stage, just like there are 2 stages of first stage. One of them is latent, and one of them is active. And latent second stage is that point from where the head has rotated. Now, all right, the quiet is over. And the uterus begins to push from above, extending the head and bringing the baby down to the perineum. That actually is second stage latent. Why? Because usually the mother is not pushing. All right, here's something. And you know, if we do not employ common sense, well, we've lost our way if we have no common sense in our practices. So I put it to you, in the British model, pushing begins when you can see the baby's head.
Aha.
You can see the baby's head. Now, common sense dictates that if the baby's head is not there, there may not be a value to forcing it down there. But when the baby's head is there, well, the baby's here. Let's push. Okay? If there were to be any pushing at all, my experience is that we wouldn't do that unless we could see the baby's head. All right. Now, to me, that makes so much sense. The baby is there. And generally speaking, when you see the baby's head, all right, you know that extension is complete, that the baby knows where it's going, that the baby has their wits about them, and that birth is imminent. See? So engaging this common sense, first of all, by rethinking second stage into two stages, latent and active. Latent, the uterus is bringing the baby down. We would call that extension. And active, the baby is here. So we're calling this one pushing and birth. Now, who's pushing when, where, what, and why? Oftentimes when when her baby is there at the perineum, and I don't mean like on the perineum coming out, all right? I mean, I'm sure you know what I mean when I say sometimes when a woman is pushing, you can see that as her vulva opens, that there's no baby there versus you can see that the baby's right there, right?
Yeah, yeah. When you see like a dime size bit of hair.
Yes. Like yeah, because that, the baby's yeah. down. The baby's yeah. there. That's what I'm saying, okay? Let me give you another piece of physiology right here. When you can see the baby's head, even a little bit, I mean, you know it's there. You know that the uterus has successfully navigated that large body part past the transcervical ligament that holds the uterus in place. Okay? Can you imagine that the baby is not coming down, you know, like a chute, all right? That's it's coming down through bone, muscle, tissue, ligaments. And there are ligaments down that surround the vaginal tube, if you will. And the uterus knows how to bring the baby down through the mother's pelvis without disrupting organs, tendons, muscles, and ligaments. Okay? And therefore, pushing and heroic pushing in which we barrel a baby down the vaginal canal has no regard for the other structures that are adjacent to the vaginal canal. There is a transcervical ligament that holds the uterus up, and if we push and push and push with the baby still above that ligament, we are dragging it down. We can actually tear the ligaments. You see? But once the baby's head is visible, you know that the uterus has successfully brought the baby under the transcervical ligament, all right, through that area. And now pushing would be even relevant. Mm-hmm. You see, that's another reason it is dangerous to push. It's dangerous to push without a mother feeling the urge to push. And okay, we can talk in a bit. There are some women who never feel the urge to push. There are some women that I've worked with who've never really pushed. The baby did kind of ooze out. I mean, and that's not what I see all the time, or even most of the time. I do see women give, there is a pushing that is, you know, or organically authentic with a woman when she's birthing her baby, all right? When the head is visible and when she's birthing her baby. But very seldom does a woman need to bring her baby down. The uterus is usually quite capable of doing that. It just dilated and is beginning to pull a cervix up. It just had a little rest, okay? And now it's back in action, pushing the baby from above rather than pulling the cervix from below there, you see? So it's an amazing feat of physiologic engineering. And if you see all the pieces of it that I'm trying to describe here, it would so inform, all right, your approach to pushing. You would so back off and realize, I am not going, I cannot be responsible for a woman's transcervical ligament. She will push when she feels like it. Mm-hmm. Then we'll know the baby's in the right position, the path is cleared, the ligaments are out of the way, and we're in readiness.
Yeah. And I find that we might not be able to, you know, it's hard to describe all this through audio, right? Like, so go, people, go and do some, look at some anatomy and find the different parts and see what we're talking about, because that's super helpful to visualize it. But I find that during the birth, you may not be able to see these things, like, internally, but you can hear it. And it's very different, and there's different sounds of pushing. Like, you might have a mom mm-hmm. that early on might be doing a little bit of grunting at the top of the contraction, and it'll be like, oh, I'm breathing it through, and they're like, ugh. But just that, right? That's doing mm-hmm. its own thing, like listening to. But when that baby has gotten in this second stage of pushing, when the baby is at the perineum, where the baby is right there, usually moms... The sound is like, gah, like you can't but push. It's such a force because it's right there. It's like, gah, you know,
yeah.
Or big
it's
screams.
It's not by choice. Mm-hmm.
Right. It is, yeah. It's not, I'm going to do this now. It's more of being taken over by the sensation.
Yes. And your instincts will guide you. A woman's instincts guide her. I've seen this so many times in terms of what position will facilitate this baby being born, in how she should move her body with the baby and with the contractions. I've seen women get on their tiptoes. I've seen women get on all fours. I've seen women lean back. I've seen women do all kinds of things, which in the general milieu would be a cause for alarm in the sense of, seeing a woman doing all of these things, and you're like, oh my goodness, get her down in the bed. She will fall. She will hurt herself. She will hurt her baby. Mm-hmm. No, this is a woman instinctively moving and spiraling with her baby. And she's not even intellectually aware that she is taking these positions or moving in these ways, you see?
Yes.
Afterwards, you'll tell her, and she's like, oh, I don't, all I knew is I was birthing my baby.
Yeah. Or they'll marvel, they're like, oh, I can't believe I was making those, like, I knew I was making those sounds, but I don't know, like, I wasn't trying to make those sounds, I was howling, you know? Yeah.
Right.
And it's so tough to see, because I see it, like, a mom that, like you say, she's arching back and extending her back and going back as she is having that urge, and then have somebody tell them, no. Curl around your baby. Tuck your chin and curl.
And oh my God.
Every fiber of her being is telling her, no, I got to extend back. And then you've also, like, you've cut into that instinct. You've demoralized her. You've told her what she's doing is wrong and that she can't trust that. You've disturbed all of that. And then now she's out of her internal deep process and then looking out for help, and you hear, I don't know, what do I do?
Yeah.
And these hormones,
you know,
start to die off. Mm. Right. And then
yes.
And then she has to exert, because now the uterus is not doing the strong movement. It's she has to do it with her, like, stretched out abdominals.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, the ramifications for what you're talking about, you know what I mean, of taking a woman's power away from her right there, the ramifications of that are legion, okay? They extend into parenting, breastfeeding, clearly healing in the postpartum of the psyche. It's so ironic, because Because I know that that's the last thing that we really want to do. We want to inspire women to be empowered. Yet, once again, taking assuming as a caregiver that you your ideas trump a woman's instincts, right? That is a very dangerous place for us to be in terms of bringing forth life on this planet. That imprints bringing forth life on the planet, that someone's intellect gets the has the ability to impinge on a woman's instinctual responses. And it's the setup. You see what I mean? The setup for all of it.
So because we're in this trying to reform, but most likely there's still, you know, this the undercurrent is of directed pushing, and that's where people feel that that's how what works for getting a baby out, not
right.
Just because that's what we're doing. We're doing what we're doing, right? So I want the listeners to hear, and this I have seen in the past, you know, since we've last spoken and in a different, changing a little bit of how I communicate with my clients and talking about this. And it's up to them to take it over. So the first thing I find listeners need to know is that there isn't that distinction between the one stage and the other. Like, they all flow into each other seamlessly, so that they don't need somebody to check them to see if they're fully dilated and give permission to push. Like, that they know. And so if they continue doing what they're doing and birthing as they're birthing and not, you know, letting themselves let their body do the flow and go with that and not push until they have to push, like have that non-issue about pushing, then what I've seen is because a lot of the providers or a lot of the like how, the medical community in general of how we're doing things, they don't believe that you can actually have a baby without pushing. In the tradition, in their directed sense, right? That's not just gonna oops happen. That requires a lot of energy and force and help.
Management.
Yes, yeah. And management. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the laboring person goes about and they get to, you know, they're in that intensity of transition, and then the pattern changes and they get the quietude and they know that this is happening, and they're like, okay, we just keep on labor, you know, we just keep on keeping on. The goal is baby, not 10. And then they get their calm, and then they get, and then they can feel, because nobody's telling them from outside, so they can feel their body and they can go like, oh, that feels different. Or they'll be in their contractions laboring and then they'll look up at me and go like, oh, baby just really moved. Like, they can feel the rotation. They can feel the extension because they're not pressing into it. Right?
Yes. Adriana, and then, this is right. So many women have said, oh, I feel my baby coming down.
Yeah. And they're like, you know? That was a big, that's much lower. Like, they feel the change.
Yes.
And they're like, great. Just, you're doing fabulous. Just do it. And then they're like, oh, baby's right there. You run out to get the care provider. The care provider has to check, right? So they go and check, and they can't insert more than like half an inch because baby is right there, right on the perineum. And then they go, oh my goodness, baby is right there. You are amazing. Look at you. You are marvelous. Baby's going to be here any minute. And baby goes to mom's chest. And then the nurse and the doctor and whoever's there, they're all in awe of this woman, telling her, look what you've done. Look at you, how amazing you are. Because they do. Their minds have been blown that this could have happened.
Right.
And that's how that's what she's hearing as she becomes a mother, as opposed to let's start pushing, and we'd start pushing, and then, you know, the care provider's there, and, you know, knowing that it's going to take several hours, they take their gloves off and they walk out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom's like, oh, I must be doing something wrong because this is not happening. Like, I'm pushing, but obviously it's not happening. And it's like, no, this is how labor is. It just takes time, and it's it's a very different experience mm-hmm. for the mom. You know?
Absolutely. It's totally different. I totally agree. All right. When a mother feels her baby coming down, it's exciting. I'm back. I'm going to birth a baby versus that trudging your way through to get the baby to inch on down and let's push a little harder this time and let's make it to 12 instead of to 10. You see what I'm saying? It's not battlefield heroics.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exciting adventure and a journey toward landing a baby on this planet. And the difference in how I'm describing it is the difference in how a mother feels about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right? As your listeners listen to you and I talk about the two different ways, you have a body feeling about that, right? You feel it in your body that there's a difference in how you end up after your birth, all right? Whether you feel empowered or whether you feel disempowered, actually. Knowing that there was something else, that there was something I missed, or knowing even that I should have listened to myself. How many times have we done that? You know, I should have listened. I knew what I was doing was right. I should have listened. I should have said no. I should have chosen something else, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This is what needs healing in the postpartum.
So much healing.
And I feel like you speak a lot to doulas, okay? And I feel like this postpartum, I call it the postpartum psyche, is clearly the province of the doula, all right? Because many women even don't want to lay that at the feet of their caregiver, okay? Because, you know, they love their caregiver or they don't or whatever, but they're not going to engage the dialogue, but they will with their doula, you see? So, I feel like be ready for this because years ago, all right, women were very happy to comply. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You were brought in. You didn't really know much about labor before the internet and videos and YouTube. You know, you had an idea about how things are going to unfold, but you know, and so basically, if you're walking into the unknown, you tend to comply with those in the room who have the most knowledge and experience. Today's woman knows all about labor. She has watched it occur with women singing through it, with women crying, with pushing, with non-pushing, with bleeding, with breech birth, et cetera, et cetera. Today's woman is not going into birth for the most part, all right, without realizing what's going on, okay? So today's woman is less likely to want to comply with things that don't seem to make sense, all right, or something that is going against their intuition or their intuitive responses. Women are less likely now to want to comply. Many women do because there's a very large program running, okay, of compliance, all right. But many women are, that the collar's too tight. No. Mm. They're rebelling against that.
And there's also many ways that women come into birth. Like some might just comply out of fear. Some might comply. Like there's like, that's a whole different enormous mm-hmm. topic of why you birthed the way you do. But I think having that look back into physiology that tells you, look, this is just like you know how to eat and you digest and you're not monitoring every second from the moment the food went into your mouth and how long you chewed and how long it went down the esophagus and the stomach and, da, 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 and when do you pooped.
Right.
You know, that's a physiological process. I think understanding it brings the trust back to you. To your body and then that you can, you know, if not you, your mind, you, your body can do this.
And nobody has to teach you how to pick up a fork.
Right.
You see what I mean? No one has to say you need to apply this much pressure between your two fingers to pick up a pork. And if you apply too much, it will fly into the sky. And if you apply too much, little, you won't be able to do it. I make that same distinction with pushing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a physiologic process that your body knows how to do. You can't teach pushing, all right, any more than you would need to teach a woman how to pick up a glass.
Yeah. So what be
See?
Let me walk you through three quick scenarios or that
sure.
are very common, and I just want your like what your thoughts on this to how to integrate physiology with this.
Okay.
So scenario one, you've got a person in transition feeling that urge to push, like the beginning, right? Feeling some pressure. Not that I can't butt push, but that like, feeling some push, doing some grunting, and has a vaginal check and find that there's a bit of a cervical lip left, that the cervix is not all gone. But the provider suggests that with the next contraction, the mom give a little push while they hold down and move that cervix back and out of the way, and that if it stays out, then she can start pushing.
Okay.
That's so. The scenario. So now mom is most likely on her back because she was just checked and is on her back, and that cervix got manually moved, made into 10, fully dilated, and now she's pushing.
And yes, she's usually pushing because the caregiver may say, okay, now we've got to keep pushing so the cervix doesn't come back, all right, and slip over the baby's head. So let's just keep pushing. Okay, so some current thought is that we are actually diagnosing a lip when there is not a lip, when it is simply the cervix still not normally being pulled up. It's not a pathology. A lip means that a piece of the cervix, the anterior cervix, gets caught between the head and the pubic bone and begins to swell. Unless you're feeling something like that, you're just simply still feeling a woman at 9 centimeters. Okay? But we have this idea now that, that's a lip. There's a lip there. We need to fix that. No, we don't. Or if we do, the obvious solution is tincture of thyme.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because thyme will pull that up. All right? A real lip is pathological, does require intervention. It is because a piece of the cervix is becoming swollen. And so what you'll see is many caregivers saying, well, we don't want that to happen. All right. Well, they're actually feeling 9 centimeters. And you say, well, you might say, well, what about the back is completely dilated? Oh, but that's what happens. The posterior part of the cervix and lower uterine segment always, well, nothing always happens, but generally happens is that it dilates first. And fastest. Why? Because it has a longer way to go. You're right. Get those anatomy charts. You can see it. You can see exactly what I'm talking about. So oftentimes what we see as a diagnosis of a lip is really just a cervix that has not completely dilated, more time, different positions. Okay? A lip usually hurts.
Mm.
A lip is a pinching. Be right down there. A woman can point to it and feel it. It's the pubic bone, because it's the pubic bone and the baby's head pinching the cervix. So if the mother, and that's like, ow, ow, ow. And you know, labor isn't usually ow.
Mm-hmm.
Labor is more like, oh, oh, that kind of thing. But a lip pinching, yes. So if a mother isn't feeling any pinching pain, I would sincerely doubt that she has a lip. All right. So one, to dispel the fact that maybe there's a misdiagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if a woman has been like that for hours and hours and hours, well, okay. In my experience, we would get a woman, you know, if a woman had seems like she's been at 9 for a long, long time or something like that, what are we going to do? A move, change positions, put her in the tub, do different things, let her lean back. I remember I did work with a woman one time who was kind of working on a lip, all right? And the best medicine for her was to sit in a birthing pool and just relax, float, okay? Float the baby off the lip, float the lip. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just sit laying down kind of in her birthing pool, all right? And works beautifully. So techniques to get the baby off the lip, that's a different discussion, okay? Because if it is a true lip, well, we don't want to keep that pressure on. We don't want the baby's head on the cervix anymore.
Right.
So beep, 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 we're going to back the baby up.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Okay. So doulas know this, all right? So any mother who has been diagnosed with a lip and it's not hurting, once again, I feel like there might be a misunderstanding of what a lip is, and that woman should have every right then to work with physician, work with water, work with her doula, different, you know, different things like that,
mm-hmm.
that we can always discuss at another time.
Yeah. And I feel
okay.
like that, and that it's like, well, the she's starting to feel the urge to push, and it's that thought of like, you can't push if you're 10, not 10. So I found this bit of cervix, but I can push it out of the way. So you can now, I'm giving you permission to push, but we know, you know, like that's just the opening just kind of was forced, but the head is probably not out of that lower uterine segment.
Mm-mm,
so
right.
It's that, oh, let's keep pushing. Maybe you say, well, I want to go pee first or something to get you off the bed and get you,
yeah.
like, I don't have to, like, to interrupt that pushing right now thing so that then you can give yourself time. You can create change in time. All right. Other scenario. Mom is now pushing and she wants to get into different positions, but the care provider has the fingers in her vagina to evaluate the effectiveness of her pushing to, you know, because we got to make sure you're pushing right. And then I find often then she's slowly coaxed to get on her back. And there's this idea that the head needs to get under the pelvic bone. The head needs to get under the pelvic bone. And the best way to do that is on your back. What does that mean? Like, does the head need to get under the pelvic bone and the best way is by being on her back?
No, I think all midwives know this. I think all midwives know that the worst, that if you're on your back, the head has to rise up, okay? Has to actually go up. The uterus has to push so much harder to push the head up through the curve of the sacrum to navigate past the pubic bone. The best way to do that is to work with gravity and for a woman to be in an upright position, actually not even in the bed, actually standing will be the most efficient way to get the baby down.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're not really talking about the baby under the pubic bone because the uterus is going to do that. That's the only way to go. All right. So first of all, any woman who is feeling like, oh, I can't get my baby down, is in the wrong, possibly in the wrong position, and
mm-hmm.
not on her back is only going to exacerbate that.
Mm-hmm.
She should say, I want to be upright. I want to be off the bed. I'm sitting on my baby's head. No wonder the baby can't come down. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is also, I think it would behoove all women to know this. And for caregivers to know it too, because I've met very few midwives actually who know this. Uterine contractions during the pushing stage come in sets, like the ocean. The ocean, if you've ever been out in the rollers out there, you'll notice that the ocean moves in sets. You have a wave, a wave, a wave, and then sometimes you can feel something building, and then next thing you know, it's a big one. Okay, and then you start again. You have a wave and a wave. You know what I'm talking about just things
and
sets like
yeah.
that? That is exactly what the uterus does. It has a contraction, and then another one, and then another one. And then all of a sudden you can feel the tension building, and then there's a big one, and that's where the baby makes progress. It is a misunderstanding of physiology to assume that the baby should make progress with every contraction. The body is not designed to do that, and I can give you a very good physiologic reason why, and that is because those rugae, those accordion pleats in the area of the vagina, all right, need to be gently coaxed to open. So that first moderate contraction, that second moderate contraction, that third one are gradually opening those rugae so that the next contraction, the one that's the big one, will bring the baby down a little more. And then we do it again, and we do it again, thereby protecting a mother's body. There's no need to sacrifice a woman's body for a hasty delivery. All right? Mm-hmm. And the only time I feel that the hasty delivery might even be in order is if you're concerned with the baby. And I feel this. I feel like we have a love affair with fetal distress in the United States. I personally, at home, I don't ever see it. Okay. In all my births, I've only, seen one case of fetal distress. I feel like a lot of the fetal distress is induced by pushing, malposition of the mother, resulting in malposition of the baby and the baby's head. So we've said all of this. Okay. So what I'm thinking is that, we can just take it slow and understand that directed pushing is really not valuable in any way. Well, I'm not going to say in any way. It's not valuable because the uterus has no intention of making progress with every single contraction.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, that is so good. Okay, here's the last scenario and we're done. Quick scenario. I want to talk with you like for days on end. Okay. As the baby is crowning, moms are very much often told, don't push or just give a little grunt or a little pants. Like, just take it really easy so that baby oozes out. Like, is that really helpful? Do you see that happening? Well, like, what do you see happening in undisturbed births at this moment, right? What do moms normally do when nobody's telling them what to do?
Okay. Well, the first piece of that scenario is that if a woman is being managed to push, all right, then a certain wisdom says that she should be managed to be pushed all the way. Because if she's being managed, she may have lost touch with her instinctual urges to push. You see what I'm saying? So that then when the baby is there, she is like, well, what am I doing now? What do I do? Get the baby out. Okay.
Right. And she might barrel
someone.
Through. Yeah.
Yes. You see, therefore, I feel like, well, if you're telling her to do this and telling her to do that, in order to protect her tissues, maybe it is a good idea now to tell her to slow down and go a little bit more gently, because you have her perineum in your hands, as it were. So, at home, what I usually see is that women take positions that can put the brakes on a labor or can speed up a labor. Okay? And a woman knows whether she needs to slow it down or to speed it up, especially if she's moving on instinct. All right. And I'm there for reassurance. I'm not usually there to tell her, yes, you should do this or not. Okay. I'm just kind of, she knows that if I'm there and I'm knitting a hat, then everything is fine. She's doing fine. Okay. So she continues to move on to her instincts. And you'll see women stroking the uterine pacemakers sometimes as they move through labor, meaning that they're bringing on stronger contractions without being aware, actually, if that's what they're doing. You'll also see women put on the brakes, okay, when the baby is coming out. Why? Because, if someone hands you a baby, you're not going to drop that baby. So this woman knows how much allowable torqueage is necessary to bring her baby out gently, all right, without damage to her baby or her tissues. So you'll see women, sometimes women will put their hands there, all right? They'll just put their hands there to kind of hold the baby, like, I got you, okay, hold on. And different, I basically, I see that when a woman is instinctual, we don't necessarily worry about, wow, she'll just blow out her baby. She'll just torpedo out the baby, okay? And sailing, it'll go sailing across the room. Once again, instinctual breaks that a woman knows how to implement in her labor. See, it all comes back to instinct.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when we disconnect a woman from her instincts, in many ways, we have to manage her.
Yeah.
You see, otherwise she's flailing. If you won't let her, you know, won't let her do what she wants to do, then you have to at least give her something.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So especially, not that I'm in favor of that,
no, right.
But I'm also, yeah, wanting to go upriver, you see, and stop interfering with her instincts.
Yeah, so, and if you've gone, it makes sense. If you've gone that far and you've managed everything, she's not going to suddenly have the instinct to, you know, get up and move or do something if it's been 3 hours.
Or slow it down,
yeah. Yeah.
Or know how, yeah. Even, you see, because it's all a flowing, instinctual, seamless weaving there that she's in her birth. And I want to mention something else, too, that when women have those premature urges to push, like you were talking about sort of in the first scenario, okay, there's a lip and then she felt like pushing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that her baby's not being born, okay? So, I mean, if the baby is up there with the piece of cervix around the baby's head, we know that the baby is not ready to be born. So if a mother feels pushy or pushing like that, I usually say, so gentle, just gentle. Because how do I know that she doesn't need to give a tiny little nudge to the baby to kind of push it against the cervix to help dilate it? You see, I don't know that. I don't know whether, oh my God, if she pushes right now, she'll stretch the cervix and rip it. I don't know whether, but all I know is that she is instinctively feeling something. So we're going to explore that. And my exploration of, if you feel like pushing and we know the baby's not there, gentle, gentle. Obviously, these are not the birthing, the contractions that are going to push your baby out. So just gentle. And as a doula, I feel like we can accommodate that, you know, not stopping women from their instinctual experiences, but helping them modulate it. All right, gentle. If you feel like pushing, oh, just gentle, gentle. It's not the birth. It's not the birthing pushing. All right, and what you'll see sometimes is then a lot of that urge goes away because the uterus reorganizes itself. You see.
So right, we're not told, like, stop, but given the permission to, like, get what it needed to get done and then move on.
Yes, you see, because how do we know that the baby didn't need a tiny little nudge from above to help rotate, you see, mm-hmm. or to get extension going or to move that cervix? So I always follow the labor. I mean, I always follow the labor and work with what her instincts are and bring to bear on that any, you know, experiences or any way that I have to facilitate what she wants to do. All right.
Fantastic.
So.
Yes.
And then, I was thinking that I had a scenario for you.
Ah.
Now I don't want to forget it, though. Now, because, you know, how you get so excited in talking about these things.
Yeah.
I think I had a scenario for you. And maybe it was that one. Maybe it was the one where a woman was wanting to push, but you knew because of your knowledge of physiology that birth is not imminent, okay?
Yeah.
So how do you help? Then how do you help a woman as a birthing caregiver? How do you help a woman get a physiologic birth?
Mm. So one of the things that I've found that is helpful is to make sure we talk about it in prenatals so that she kind of knows. Not surprisingly, with all this, with the podcast and all the information-centric reality that I live in, I tend to attract clients that are very thinking and very type A, that sense, right? Like, because we analyze things a lot, right? I do that. I track that. Makes sense. So it's hard to tap into the instincts if you don't know why. So during prenatals, I make sure we talk about these things. And I even pull the charts out. And I tell them why. And I tell them, you know, there might be a chance that your care provider is going to probably do this. And so you can feel what you know, decide. You have a choice. It's all in, like, you are in the driver's seat. This is yours. You can decide where you go, where you not go. But we explain it in prenatals so that when the labor happens, we don't have to explain it, which is great because we don't want to think. But there's little things that we've already said that she knows what I mean if she's asking for that help. So I'll say, you know, go deeper. Right? And she knows what I'm meaning by that. And it's funny you're mentioning this because I had one client who during pushing, she was very much having that involuntary feeling, and she was almost dry heaving, because sometimes it can feel like your uterus is throwing up but down when you're having that involuntary movement, right? It's like kind of that same idea. So she was having it and dry heaving at the same time, and you could see that it was just her, like, she was just along for the ride of what her body was doing. But so she did about it, baby was high up. Baby was, when that started, baby had been posterior. So baby was like at plus one when all this started, that she started having that involuntary movement of pushing. And at one point she was like, oh, that felt a lot lower. So I was like, great. I know what that means. That means either rotation or extension. Like, there was a big movement there. That's what we kind of were waiting for. And she had been doing this for an hour and a half, 2 hours. She was really tired, really exhausted. It had been an exhausting labor. And the care provider that we had there really wanted to direct the pushing. And mom was getting really tired. So she was like, okay, well, I'm going to try it. And she kind of did it, half did it, because she wasn't completely holding her breath. She wasn't completely bringing, like, she wasn't exactly doing what this person wanted her to do. Right? It was like a halfway. And then she did about 20 minutes of that. And she looked up at me. She was like, but now I feel like I have to work much harder. I thought my uterus was going to do this. And I go, well, because now you are working much harder. Like, see if you can go deeper and see if what that feels like. And so it was almost like she had, you know, a seesaw. She was like, okay, I'll do more. I'll go deeper, more hormones. I can feel my uterus doing more work. I have to do less more. I can see that if I'm going into the thinking brain and going, like, I can see these hormones stopping, and now I got to work harder. Like, she was definitely seesawing it. Right? So it was beautiful to me to watch that.
Yes.
Right?
Perfect. Yes. Okay. Always, I love when you talk, because I can see that you're always there to provide somebody what they need in that moment. And I love that. Okay. I do. And I think that's what she needed in that moment, to be able to hear you say, go deeper, because she might feel like, well, this isn't really hooking up, or, you know, she's not going to use the word, I'm not aligned, or, what, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. But going deeper, that's a wonderful phrase, Adriana. I like that. I'm going to use that too.
Because that's where things happen, right? It's internal. It's you go in, and see what you find.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so much fun to talk to you, Wapio. I love every time you come on this show.
Oh, thank you. I love it too. I always love hearing you. And, you know, I love the fact that you're doing some critical thinking here about birth, you know, and just really revisiting some areas that, you know, I feel like it's for the good of all that we revisit them. So thank you for the work that you're doing. I appreciate it.
Mighty Ones, I love to hear from you. So share with me your thoughts, and if there's a certain topic you'd like to know more about, let me know. Go to birthful.com where you can learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. I'm also on Facebook or Twitter as @birthful, so come say hi. And remember to use the code SCHOOL this week to get some awesome discounts on both the Birth Partners Ultimate Labor Support Toolkit and my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. Go to birthful.com to learn more. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Aeroflow Breast Pumps. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.